we can go ahead and get started. It's right at 2:30. If I can get a couple of volunteers to read Psalm 1 at some point for me. Psalm 1. There's one.
If you give me a Bible.
Is it? Do you have your phone? Is it not working?
I have it on my phone.
I think she can probably help you. She's a sweet lady. Over the next couple afternoons, we'll be thinking about what it looks like to be rooted in such a way that we'll be connected to good stuff. My name is Brian Shackman. I work at the Glendale Church of Christ, about 30 minutes from here, suburb of Los Angeles. My wife Mandy is there in the back. Our son Carter is up in the child care. Hopefully he does all right. He's just a little bit over three, but he's a lot of fun. It gives us a lot of joy to play with him a lot. But as I've learned as a parent, life just keeps getting busier when you're a parent. Things are not really your own, and we have a lot of fun with him, but it's also a lot of stress. And I think that's not uncommon, whether you have kids or not, whether you're single, whether you're married. It's common for us to feel like we have a lot going on. In fact, there was a study that was done that I read about a couple years back where if people were asked to describe themselves, like what's going on in your life, within the first 30 words, an American would likely use the word busy or tired at some point to describe their life, because that's just what it is. We're busy, we're tired, which in some ways doesn't make a lot of sense, because we have unbelievable comforts and one of the wealthiest nations in human history, but it's hard for us to actually find ways to disconnect, to get rid of the busyness that we have. We have so many things that are constantly in front of us. It's hard for us to figure out how to get away from it in such a way that we would find true peace and find rest. And in some ways, that's just unavoidable. Like, that's just the pace of life. That's where we are. The thought was that once we figured out email, like, work days would go to 4 hours a week, but actually that hasn't happened. We have just more emails and all the forwards that your uncle sends you that just clog that up. And we just keep running at this pace. And so in some ways, it's unavoidable. So how can we know in this pace of life that we're connected to good stuff? How can you say, you know, I'm doing things that I should be doing, I'm connected to the right places, I'm doing the right things? And we're a very distracted culture. I can't see what's right in front of me sometimes. And I'm a millennial, technically, I guess. I was born in December 1982, and I think 1982 is the cutoff. So I barely slide in. I don't think they accept me as cool enough because I don't have skinny jeans. I don't really get technology that well. Learning how to do Twitter still. But we have a lot of things that are in front of us all the time. We just, I think, generally try to avoid boredom at any cost. That's just like the number one goal for people of my generation. If you're bored, then you're not actually living. And I remember growing up with Game Boys around me all the time. If I wasn't around my Nintendo, that was just what life was. And it's interesting to know that boredom is actually a modern invention. The word boredom didn't exist, basically, until a Charles Dickens novel, people think, in the 1850s, in a novel called Bleak House, where he uses it six times. So it's interesting that from 1850 to now, it's become this word that is so common and the thing that people want to avoid desperately. But actually, it can be a good thing to slow down. It can be a good thing to be bored. It can be a good thing to reflect and think about where life is headed. My wife listens regularly to a podcast by Donald Miller, and she was telling me about how he recently discussed the idea of boredom and how it's actually very different. If you sit at an appointment and you're waiting for your doctor to come in and the doctor hasn't shown up, that you sit there on your phone for that 20 or 30 minutes, and that is very different than just sitting in the doctor's office and waiting. The brain just does very different stuff. It's way better for you to be outside and walking around in that 20 minutes than just glued to your phone, just trying desperately not to be bored. So in a lot of ways, our world is a great place. But how do we know that we're connected to good stuff? How do we know that we're not just spinning our wheels? There is information that comes out on this all the time. One of the biggest sections at any bookstore is the self-help section. And some of the self-help books from the last year that came out, one of them was called Happy is the New Healthy. And in this book, the author describes what it means to have a perspective shift, that if you could just be happy, then everything's going to work out. And there are these 31 techniques, and if you read the book, then you're going to be happier, at least that's the guarantee. And if everything goes well, then things are going to be better if you can just figure out how to just shift your perspective a little bit. And then the next book that was in this top 10 list was a little more creatively titled, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys have read that.
I remember that one.
And in this book, I'll just leave this boyfriend barf, but in this book, the author argues that there are things that happen throughout the day that, you know, you probably need to clean that up if that happens. You need to take care of that. The way that life is better, this author would argue, is by just taking care of what's right in front of you, making lists, doing things in order. One of the best pieces of advice in the book is that if you're cleaning up, you need to turn on music. Like, that actually helps. So she says, make sure and do that. Just take care of the things that are right in front of you. Make your life orderly. And also in the top 10 is a book that was called The Surrender Experiment. And it's a book about a CEO who was very busy. His life was really crowded. And he just decided the best way to be a CEO was just to let life happen. Like, just to chill. Just take it easy. And things were just going to work out. And don't live with so much stress and anxiety because you can't control everything. And I would argue that all three of these perspectives are pretty healthy. All three of these things, there'd probably be things if any of us were reading, we would highlight and send to our friends or use in sermons if you're like me. All three of these things would have important things for us to think about, but I don't even know what I'm supposed to do by basically reading the titles and the summaries. I don't know whether to make a list or to chill out. I don't know whether I'm just supposed to shift my perspective a little bit or just surrender and let life happen to me. And where do you go to get connected to good stuff? And how do you know that you're rooted in some place that is going to lead your life to a good place? How do you know that you are connected to something that's going to last? I think the Psalms are an interesting place to look when you think about that. Because the psalmist comes along and says, in very gritty terms, sometimes things that we would definitely not say in church, we would definitely not say some of the things, even in a private journal to God. I mean, wow, that's a little rough there, David. Chill out a bit. I mean, you don't really say that kind of thing in those kind of settings because we aren't that honest with God. The psalmist, I think, especially in Psalm chapter 1, presents us with a way to think about life and to connect to good things. So I'll ask my brother and my sister to go ahead and read. You can read first from the front row.
Shall we read the whole psalm?
Yes, please. Okay.
Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yield its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Not so with the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Why do the nations... Oh, I'm sorry, that's it. I was going over to Psalm 2.
Awesome, thank you. Melissa?
So the same Psalm?
Yeah, go ahead.
Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, as you read that passage, there are several terms maybe that jump out to you, a mockery, wicked, chaff, and there's kind of a lot going on there. But the first word, I would argue, is extremely helpful in understanding what this psalm is getting at. And actually, the writer is being prescriptive. He's describing what life is like. And the first word is one, it's a Hebrew word, ashrai, I'll go ahead and write that on the board. I saw my Hebrew teacher is here on campus, and I didn't think he would be in here, so I could pull this off. Because he probably is like, that guy wasn't that great of a student. How does he teach a class in this thing? So it's Ashrai, and I think this word is actually very interesting, and I'm hoping that it actually is, because sometimes when you come out of grad school, you think you have interesting words, and they're not. But this word is very fascinating. It's a word that means blessed, but there are different words for blessed in the Hebrew language. One of them means the way that I think we would typically understand blessing, that it's just this unmerited gift of grace that it comes upon us, that God has given. It's just something that we don't deserve. But actually, this word means something different. It means a blessing that comes because you choose correctly, that you choose well, that you have made the decision that you should. And of course, life doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you make good decisions and they don't fully come through. But most of the time, the writer is saying, when you make these kinds of decisions, when you're doing the things that you should be, the things that you're intended to do, then you are most likely going to thrive. You're going to live a life that has this kind of blessedness to it. It's a word actually that is used in the Greek translation, the Septuagint of the Hebrew Bible. It's the same word that's used later in the New Testament when Jesus begins the Sermon on the Mount and says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." So it's this understanding of happiness in some ways. It's that you are fortunate, you have made this decision, and because of the decisions that you're making, you're walking in a certain way. So he begins by saying, blessed, the person who is making these kinds of decisions is the one who doesn't walk in step with the wicked or stand in the way that sinners take or sit in company with mockers. And that progression is pretty quick and doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us, but what he's communicating is there are bad ideas floating around in the world. There are things that you probably shouldn't be part of. There are people that you probably shouldn't hang out with. And there are things that you are part of in your life that aren't working out that well. So stop it, basically, is what he's saying. And he communicates this with this progression that at first it starts with just walking with it, right? You're walking alongside somebody and that person's idea is coming into your head. And it's just a fleeting idea. And at first you probably think it's really dumb, but then they keep talking and you think, oh, that does sound like a good idea, actually. And then the next step is that you stand. You would stand to listen to a rabbi or a teacher. And so you would say, you know, this idea is good enough that I might start to stand around it for a while. And then the last progression is that you're sitting, which was the posture of a teacher. So you've moved very quickly from walking with an idea to standing just to hear it a little bit closer. I think I'm going to sit with this for a while. I'm going to be the one now who teaches it. I'm not just listening to it or just a part of it. I am going to literally be teaching this stuff. The blessed is the one who chooses the things that are going to work instead of letting this dysfunction continue in your life, letting these ideas, these things that shouldn't be in your mind, things that shouldn't be helpful, just push those things away and instead choose a life that is the thing that God has intended for you. And if any of you have been around college campuses, you know how slippery of a slope this thing can become. I went to Pepperdine, which I was very blessed because at Pepperdine you got to actually hang out with girls at night. But at the other schools in the Church of Christ, I understand that's not the case. And some of my friends who went to Harding and went to Abilene have some crazy stories. And I think it may be, I get the reason why people are careful about letting girls and guys hang out at night, but I think it might be worse when the guys just hang out all together because crazy stuff happens. My friend Jonathan, who's here, tells a story about one time that he and his friends, I think it was you, might have been somebody else, who they were on the third story of this dorm, and they went into their bathroom and decided they were going to plug up all the drains and see what would happen if they could make it into a pool. So they just let the showers run and let the water get higher and higher until the third floor was going on to the second floor, and it was then going on to the first floor, which was really unfortunate because someone was using the bathroom on the first floor, and he was very confused about what was going on. I mean, it's a slippery slope when bad ideas get presented, especially at the wrong times to the wrong people, and suddenly you can be in some pretty bad places if you're letting those things hang around in your life. To be a good-rooted person is to look at things and say, this isn't working, and I'm going to stop doing it. This whatever it is isn't working for me, and I'm not going to continue to let it be in my life. A question that I think is helpful for us to ask that we don't ask very often is, what is working in my life? And what's helping? What is holistically changing me? And what are the things that are effective? What are the things that are blessing me? How can I be more part of that? How can I invest more in those things? We don't take time to pause and reflect on this. And where is your mind at peace? Where are you most healthy? Where do you experience great joy? There was an older man at the church that I grew up at, and I remember this conversation to this day. We had our fellowship time like churches often do, and we had donuts out, and I was enjoying a donut as a seventh grade boy. And he came up to me and he said, "You should probably watch eating that," which I probably should have. And I said, "Oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's just a donut." And he said, "Well, I never eat sugar." And it probably wasn't the best way for him to communicate this to me, but I said, "Well, that's great. Like, why not?" And he said, "Because my body is a temple. It's a temple of the Holy Spirit." And as a seventh grader, I remember thinking, that is the stupidest idea ever. And I literally thought, that has nothing to do with the gospel. What are you talking about? Let me prove to you like how that's really, really dumb. I distinctly remember thinking that's one of the just stupidest things I ever heard. Why on earth would you say that? And of course, like everything in moderation, I think you have to be a little bit careful. But I think it's actually helpful to think like that, to think more holistically about what the gospel is calling us to do and what Jesus is calling us to be in the world. If you were to ask the average Christian what Christian faith is all about, they would probably say forgiveness of sins, which is really important and a really significant thing. But we often forget the why after the forgiveness. In the Old Testament, we're offered shalom with God, holistic peace. That you're at peace with God, you're at peace with others, you're at peace with yourself. So forgiveness of sins is really good. It's an important part. It's a critical aspect of the gospel. But the reason for it is to get to wholeness again. It's to once again have this shalom. It's getting back to Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, where Adam and Eve are naked and they feel no shame. That there's this move in our hearts. We desire that. We desire this shalom. So forgiveness of sins is really important. But we might need to think about how to make our gospel more holistic. How to understand that our body is a temple means that you probably need to be careful with it in certain ways. And what's working for you and what's not. I'll always remember Rick Warren, who, when they started some of their healthy eating campaigns, he said, "We pray so often for people to have good health. They're in the hospital and they're sick. Something's going wrong. And that's wonderful. We should continue to do it. But maybe we should also pray for people who are healthy to use their bodies well. Maybe we should pray that people who currently are able to walk around and be in the world who aren't in the hospital, that they would use their bodies in such a way that it would glorify God." And maybe it would help, literally, to just make a list in your life and say, you know, like, what is working and what is not? And what are the things in your life that are working for you, that are bringing you greater peace, that are bringing you greater joy, that are connecting you more deeply with God, with yourself, to make your body more effective, to think about how you are using yourself in the world? For me, that's something that was a very hard conversation several years ago. I have a back problem, and my wife said, "I have this idea, you're not going to like it," which is always a great way to start a conversation. Yeah. And she said, "I was doing some reading, and the inflammatory disease you have might be helped if we cut out gluten." And that was the first time I ever heard the word gluten, and now it's everywhere, right? And so we started this thing where I started just no gluten. We did it for a solid 4 months, and I was feeling really, really good. My back was great. My inflammation went down, and life was really great. And so we have started introducing gluten back into our lives, which, thank the Lord for lasagna and pizza and some of those things. But I don't do it very often. In our home, we typically don't have gluten, and I'll try to avoid it as much as I can. When I do cheat on gluten, it has to be worth it, is kind of the motto that I have for it. But then there are times, like during the holidays and during things, where I splurge a little bit and I end up thinking, woe is me, you know, I'm just a terrible person. And just a few days back on the gluten train just totally derailed my life. And what in your life is working? And what isn't? Stop hanging around dumb ideas, because dumb ideas lead you to slippery slopes, to dangerous places. The psalmist continues, the one who delights in the law of the Lord, the one who meditates on his in his law day and night. And instead of chasing after every dumb idea, instead delighting in God, finding a way to say, God, what do you call me to? What are you calling me to? Who are you calling me to be? How could I be your peacemaker in the world? How could I show people what you're like? How could I connect with people around my office in my community to show them that there's something different about me? And it's not just that I'm a little bit angrier. It's that I'm actually changed. That there's a peace that I have in my heart. And the word delight there in Hebrew, it literally means a guttural noise that an animal makes after it's killed its prey and it's right about to eat. Which is the same noise I make before I eat a great steak, right? I mean, just like that just feeling of joy right before you're about to eat that special meal, that special thing. Finding ways to have that kind of delight in the Lord. To see that God has things that are good for us, good plans for us, to take pleasure in those things, to find the truth in the world, to find those things and savor those things. My brother-in-law works with college students, and he does some spiritual formation things with them, and they were doing some things at a retreat one time, and this one guy that was part of the group had just come to faith, and he was really excited about this thing that he had found. He wanted to share it with the group, and he starts to recite this poem, and he said, there was this time I found this poem online. It was so beautiful. Jesus was walking along the beach, and I saw the scenes of my life, and there were times that were really hard, and I wondered why there was only one set of footprints, and Jesus left me. He's weeping about the footprints poem. And all the rest of the Christians in the room are thinking, it's time to get over that, man. That's pretty early on. But whenever I think of delighting in the Lord, I think of weeping about the footprints poem. A deeply knowing the truths of God, the way that God feels about us, the way that God is with us, and allowing those things, pursuing those things with our lives, finding delight in God. The psalmist continues, that person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. What fruit is being produced? And how many of us have excuses for non-fruit in our lives? How many of us have reasons because, you know, I have this or that, I can't produce fruit? And what exactly are you producing from your faith? Is there good stuff that's coming up? My son Carter was up in the childcare time earlier, and after I got him, I said, how was it up there? And he said, I pushed Heath. And sorry if Heath's parents is in here, sorry about that. And I said, well, that's not good, buddy. And he said, I only did it sometimes, because I don't really fully understand what that meant. But I guess that was better than all the time, perhaps. And kids are so honest. And we lose that pretty quickly, don't we? We aren't willing to take an honest look at our life and say, what's going on? And what is the fruit that I'm producing? What are the things that I'm part of? How am I creating a better world? Have you ever been around a Christian who is just not really a Christian with the way they act, the way they treat people? And you think, how is it possible? And you're around the gospel all the time. At what point is it going to start to take some root? I was talking with Bob Plank, a family friend of mine, earlier this week, and he said that he, at the church that they're at in Sacramento, he decided that they were going to start shifting around their programming, because it seemed like in most Christian churches, we found a way to come and hear the gospel and nod at it and say, that's great, but not really figure out how to apply it. He said that if you think about it, a person who's an active member of your church probably spends, 100 to 200 hours in part of small groups or part of your Sunday morning services or whatever you have. So after 7 to 10 years, people should be PhD level Christians. And people should be maturing. There should be a deeper peace. There should be great things being produced in people's lives. That we've created a culture where it's okay to just kind of show up and keep going and not really think about what fruit is being produced in my life. What are the things that God is calling me to do? How can I continue on this journey? And one of the reasons why I think we're not all that different from other people is we don't ask ourselves hard questions. We aren't honest about the things that are going on. And the psalmist here just holds it up for you. It's like the person who is living out the way that God has called you to be will produce fruit. There will be some fruit produced in your life. So what is it? Umberto Eco, who is an Italian novelist and professor, he said, "I believe what we become depends on what our fathers teach us at odd moments when they aren't trying to teach us. We're formed by the little scraps of wisdom." And I think that's true about parenting. I wish it wasn't true, because I wish I could just kill it as a parent for an hour a week and be totally good, right? Or if I could just refer back to that one time I killed it a few weeks ago and say, "Carter, remember that? That was pretty amazing, right? That was amazing what I did." But it's not that way. We learn from our parents. We learn from our mentors, the people who are a part of our lives, not when they're trying to teach us. We learn all the time from them. We learn what life is about. We learn what their life is about, what they're connected to. We learn those things, not just when they're trying to teach, but all the time. And that is, of course, true in our lives spiritually as well. That we don't just get to teach when we pass out tracts. We teach when we're a neighbor. We teach when we're a friend. We teach when we walk with people. We teach at all times. In fact, we probably do more teaching when we're not teaching, when we're trying to just blend in. We teach in those moments as well. So the psalmist says you can't sit in non-fruit. At some point, you have to think, what is working in my life? How can I continue on this journey? How could I be more Christ-like? How can this continue to grow in me? Because the gospel isn't just sin forgiveness. It's so much better than that. Jesus has a lawyer come ask him an important question. And he says, "Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." So the lawyer comes and says, what's the most important thing? How am I supposed to do this? What is my life supposed to look like? And Jesus says, "Love the Lord your God." And I really wish Jesus would have left it at that. That'd be pretty nice. That I could just sit in a room and think about God. And of course, that's important to have that time to connect with God. But also, it has to pour out into your neighborhood. To show people in your community that you're loving them as yourself, you have to produce fruit. At some point, things have to spill out of you. And this lawyer just wants something that he can pontificate on and think about a little bit. I was on a murder case several years ago, and during that case, it was about 6 weeks, and that was probably like 4 weeks too long because it was very boring at times. One of the things that was very crucial in this case was cell phone testimony, because people were driving certain places. If you ever want to commit a murder, don't take your cell phone, just FYI. But you guys probably don't need to know that. You're good. But this guy drove to the scene with his phone, and it was pinging all the way on the towers and things. So we had to listen to excruciating amounts of cell phone testimony. There was testimony from, and they all had different cell phone carriers. So AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and just listening to days and days. It was 2 weeks of my life I can't have back. I'm just looking at, this is how you read a cell phone bill, and this is how you do that. So I know what it's like when lawyers get involved, and it just gets down to the nitty gritty. They want to just kind of pontificate about things and not really get to action at some points. The lawyer just says, "Give me something that I can just go sip on a martini in the club and think about for a little while." And Jesus says, at some point, it has to come out of you. And it will. And whether you like it or not, it's going to. But the love that you have for God, loving God with all your heart, is connected deeply with how you treat people, who you are in the world. It's going to make a difference. People are learning from you even when you aren't teaching. What are you producing in your relationships? Is it good news when you show up somewhere? You can say, I'm just the truth teller in my family, but that's not true. And is it good news when you show up somewhere? If not, then why would you sit in it any longer? I think this theme runs throughout Scripture, that we would be people who would not just think about these things, that we would be people who do them. And how do you know that you're rooted and connected in deep stuff and good stuff with all the busyness, the things that are going on in our world? It's a simple question. What fruit are you producing? What fruit do you see in your life? How has the fruit that you're producing gotten better from last year to this year? What maturity are you seeing? James, the half-brother of Jesus, writes in such a provocative way about what it means to follow Christ. He's someone who spent a lot of time with Jesus, at first didn't believe in Jesus. But he thinks that life is about following through, about doing things. And Martin Luther, who focused so much on faith, which was a really good thing during the Reformation, he wanted to throw out the book of James because it's just so practical. This is Jesus' brother. He spent time with him. He hung out with him. He's saying this is what Jesus is about. Faith matters. But at some point, you got to do something. At some point, you have to be involved. At some point, you have to think, what is working in my life and what's not? I love how Oliver Wendell Holmes says this. He says, many people die with the music still in them. Too often, it is because they're always getting ready to live. Before they know it, time runs out. I think it's true. You're leaving a soundtrack with your lives. And we're invited to create something that's unique, something that lasts, something that's a blessing from generation to generation. What is the soundtrack that you're currently leaving? Is it making the impact on the world that you want to? It's helpful for us to think in these ways. And think about the person who brought you to faith, the person who came alongside you. Maybe it was a parent, maybe it was a grandparent who helped you to learn and to sustain you. Maybe it was someone in your church family who you just realized. I know for me, it was this youth minister who was a part of my life and taught me that you could be a Christian and be cool at the same time. I haven't figured that out personally, but this guy did. He would play video games with me, and he would talk about interesting life stuff, and he changed my life. And the people who bring us to faith aren't the bitter people, aren't the angry people. And you don't continue to be part of a church because someone was really mean to you. At some point, we have to produce fruit. We have to think, okay, what is working in my life and what's not? And are we being led to a deeper sense of peace? Are we being led to the shalom that God has for us? A few weeks ago, I got to talk with a couple new members at our church, and they hadn't been in church for a very long time. They had grown up with faith, but they had walked away for several years, and they said that they wanted to start coming back, and they were looking around and just listening to see where God might be leading them, maybe. And they said that they found our church because they found out that one of our elders, Grant, who I can brag on because he's not here, he is just a really deeply spiritual, just wonderful person to be around. Most of the talk that preachers have about elders at Bible lectures is bad, but no, I love our elders. I love the guys I get to work with. And he had shared his car with a girl that was in our church. Just no strings attached. You can have my car for a while. They had an extra car, so they let her borrow it. This girl was on the ultimate frisbee team with this couple. They heard that. They said, I want to be a part of that church where people are loaning out cars to each other. You don't come to our church because of that, because we're not making that a common thing. But I thought, that's what our world should be about as Christians. That it's not when we're trying to teach people, that it's just an overflow of what we do. Because if you were to ask Grant about that, he wouldn't have thought it was a heroic thing or anything. It's just who he is. May we be the kind of people who don't just let bad ideas or bad habits slowly become part of our lives. That we would walk around with it for a while, that eventually we would be standing in it, then eventually we're teaching it. May we be people who just ask the simple question, what's working? And how could I maybe make my life work a little bit better in a deeper faith with Christ? What's an area that I need some maturing in? What's an area that God is calling me to be different? We can't sit in non-fruit. Psalms says, some point you got to realize, are you producing good fruit or not? Jesus says, yeah, you can think about the idea of loving God. That's really important. That helps you to love people in the world. But eventually, you got to love a real live person. James comes along and echoes the same things. James says, I'm with my brother, man. I'm with my brother. Faith without works is dead eventually. You got to do something. We're leaving a soundtrack for the world. Let's think about what that is and try to make it something that people will actually want to listen to. Let's pray. God, may we be willing to ask hard questions of our lives, to think through who you've called us to be, and to leave a good soundtrack in the world. May we consider who you've called us to be. May we understand that the gospel isn't just sin forgiveness. It's calling us to a different kind of wholeness. May we grow increasingly mature. May we learn to love you as you've loved us. Help us to be the kind of people that good things just flow out of, that people would come to know you because of what we do. Father, help us to not let things that aren't fruit continue in our lives, but to challenge ourselves to think about how we can give your good news and good fruit to the world. In your Son Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Thanks, guys.